The neocon narrative is crumbling, and more conservatives are rejecting their empire-building foreign interventionalism. What caused the rejection of this narrative, and why should Catholics also oppose it? That's what I'm going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. First, I just want to encourage people to smash that like button, to subscribe to the channel, let other people know about it as we grow the channel, continue to grow the channel. It's great for other people to find out about it. We actually have probably more people who listen to the audio of the podcast than we do, well, we definitely do, than we do on YouTube, which is our primary video platform. But we also show the live one stream on Facebook and Twitter as well. And they're also on Odyssey. They show up on Odyssey as well later. I stopped live streaming on Odyssey a little while ago. I mean, I love Odyssey, but I was having too many technical problems. I was continually having problems with it. So I decided, okay, I'm just going to live stream to the big three, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and then we'll move on. And then it'll be put on those other platforms like Odyssey later. Also, I want to encourage people to follow Crisis Magazine at all the major social media sites. At Crisis Mag is what we are at most of them. I think all of them, I think we're at Crisis Mag. Okay, so I think this podcast, what I want to talk about is how many conservatives, including myself, have gone from a neocon view of foreign policy to a much more anti-war view of foreign policy. Now, I explicitly call myself anti-war. I know most conservatives don't do that, and that's fine. I do have a few nuances in my statement that I'm anti-war that some anti-war people might not believe, but I have them. I'll get into that a little bit later. But I want to talk in general about how I went from neocon to anti-war, but in the context of how a lot of conservatives have done this. I think I did it a little bit differently than some, but a lot have, and I think it's a great thing. Obviously, Crisis Magazine has done that. Has gone from a much more neocon position when it comes to foreign policy back decades ago to now anti-war. And I've talked about that before. But I'm old enough that I grew up, I was a teenager in the 1980s. And I remember in the 1980s, it was very well known conservatives were pro-aggressive foreign policy. So, for example, against the Soviet Union, Reagan was our hero. And he was aggressively trying to withstand Soviet Union. And so he'd get involved, obviously, you get the U.S. government involved in foreign policy endeavors. And the liberals, the left, the Democrats, they were anti-war, 100% anti any of that. And they were anti-war really that came out of the Vietnam War from only a decade before. And they very much opposed all war. And so the tag anti-war, the label, came to be associated with leftists, with liberals, and it really came to be associated with people who were philosophically opposed to all war, no matter what, basically pacifist in general. Now, at the time, I was a conservative, good conservative teenager, and I, of course, just supported the conservative side, and so I was for the foreign policy of the conservatives, and I thought the anti-war, a bunch of hippies, liberals who didn't have a brain. And then in 1990, I remember very distinctly when the first Iraq war started under George H.W. Bush, I was very supportive of it. Thought, obviously, this sounds like a good thing. These poor Kuwaitis are being persecuted, attacked, whatever, by Saddam Hussein, who is the next Hitler. And so I supported that. And I thought, yes, obviously we should do that. What could go wrong? And sure enough, in my mind, everything went right because the war was over very quickly. Our main objectives were met. It wasn't like a quagmire. I mean, at that time, all the anti-war people were saying, oh, it's going to be a quagmire. It's going to be a disaster. It's going to be another Vietnam. You can't do this. And none of that happened. It all went very cleanly. From my view in the suburbs of America, everything went cleanly. However, of course, now that we can look back on it, there were a number of consequences to that Iraq war and our continued and bolstered presence in the Middle East. One of them is a certain man named Osama bin Laden was very unhappy with that. And a lot of people, Middle Eastern men, particularly Muslim men, were very upset about this, the American presence in the Middle East. And so Osama bin Laden was able to call his people to him And of course, we end up with 9/11. Now, any suggestion like this, obviously, you get the neocon responses. What? You're blaming 9/11 on America? You're blaming 9/11 on our troops? No, that's not what I'm doing. What I'm saying is that 9/11 didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened for a reason. And Osama bin Laden gave the reasons why he did it. And one of the primary reasons was the American presence in the Middle East, particularly Saudi Arabia. And that was directly tied to the Iraq War. I mean, we had a presence there before that, but it just bolstered it. And note this was under Bush, but also under Clinton. And then Bush too, of course. And so, but I supported after 9/11, I was caught up in the patriotic fervor like everybody else. And I'm going to tell something. I don't think I've ever made this public, but I actually applied to the CIA after 9/11. That's the big reveal of this episode. I'll put it here first. I actually applied. I was a computer programmer. I applied to become a computer programmer at the CIA. I was living in Washington, D.C. at the time. So it was right in my backyard. I never heard back from them. Thank God. I'm very thankful that I never heard back from them. Maybe they did a background check and they saw my arrest for protesting, you know, doing Operation Rescue and things like that, and thought, this guy, no chance. Or maybe my resume just wasn't good enough too. That's always possible. But I supported the invasion of Afghanistan because I believed, like most Americans believed, that it was just going after Osama bin Laden. Let's stop the people who did this to us. Now, we know in hindsight, and we should have known then, that it became much more than that very quickly. In fact, it never was only about getting Osama bin Laden. Already, George W. Bush was making this about nation building, about changing things across the world. And so I didn't really care about the details, so I supported that. Now, in 2003, 2004, during the run-up to the Iraq War, the second Iraq War, this was the first time I thought, well, hold on a second. I'm not so sure about this one. And most conservatives at that time, I was very much in the minority at that time. Most conservatives were definitely for the neocon narrative. They were definitely pushing for the second Iraq War. You go back in the pages of Crisis Magazine, for example, and you see justifications for it. Obviously, the neocons, George Weigel was saying how this is a just war and how we should do this and all that. I remember thinking, like, I'm not so sure. I'm not sure I believe that Saddam Hussein is actually a threat to America. He really has weapons of mass destruction. We found out later that that wasn't true, that he didn't really have the ability to do anything damage to us. And so, but I didn't publicly oppose it, you know, in my circle of friends or on blogs or anything like that at the time, because I just felt like, well, all the conservatives are for it and I'm a conservative. So my misgivings, I probably should just keep them to myself. And that might be the last time I ever kept anything to myself publicly. But it really was a moment for me where I realized later, like, I had those misgivings. I should have considered them more deeply and not just gone along with the crowd. I really did just go along with the crowd. And then a few years later, but again, at this point, most conservatives, almost every conservative was very much for Iraq War II as well. Any of them who claimed they were not for it probably is doing revisionist history, because most conservatives were definitely for it. But then in 2008, we start hearing from Ron Paul, obviously been around before that, but in the Republican nomination process, when he stood up to Rudy Giuliani, who really is not a good person. I'm sorry, but Rudy Giuliani, thankfully, that was very easily seen during the 2008 nomination process that he got crushed, even though he was supposedly the front runner for a while. But Ron Paul stood up to him and his warmongering. And that was, like a lot of people, that was a light bulb for me, that all of a sudden I saw a guy who has very good credentials. He's a Republican nominee, in the Republican Party. He's pro-life. I mean, that was, of course, the most important thing for me, still is. And here he is opposing the war machine of America. And that made me think, like, okay, maybe this is something I should look into a little bit more. Maybe the narrative I've been sold for so many years isn't exactly as true as I think it is. And maybe Ron Paul has some good points to make. And then over the next few years, after that, maybe the next decade after that, I really just started to get tired of the constant interventionalism that we see all around the globe. I mean, just in this century alone, America's military is involved in Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Libya, Syria, Yemen, and Ukraine. Now, I could be missing a few of those. Actually, I think it might be even more than that, but that's the minimum. Those are the big ones that I know about, that we've been involved in some way, either funding or actually boots on the ground, fighting, whatever the case may be, all these different conflicts. And is the world better off today than it was 20 years ago before we started getting involved in all? Now, we were involved before that even, but the point is like, we've been involved in all these places. Are any of these specific places we've been involved in better off? Perhaps you could argue for Libya, Syria might be, but not because of the U.S. Yemen, definitely not. In fact, today there's a vote in the Senate about ending our involvement in Yemen. I hope that it passes, and that it actually is sponsored, I think, and led by Bernie Sanders. And I am the opposite of a Bernie Sanders fan, but God bless them for pushing this. Afghanistan is a perfect example where we went in there. We were there for 20 years. Thousands and thousands of people died. Terrible destruction. And then the end result is what? The same as it was before we started. Iraq is obviously not better off. So we have all these things happening, and it's making me rethink the neocon narrative. Now, I admit that I was led into it much from a libertarian point of view. As I started to embrace more libertarian views, that got me thinking about the neocon narrative when it comes to foreign policy. And this idea that the U.S. needs to spread democracy around the world. And when George W. Bush first said that, I really did kind of say, okay, that sounds good. Democracy's good. So it'd be good if it was in more places. But that is such a terrible, terrible policy, the idea that we're going to spread democracy at the point of a gun. I mean, that's not exactly democracy, is it? You people don't want democracy. We're going to force it upon you. I mean, that's ridiculous. And this idea of American interests being so broadly defined that basically if our government says it's in our interest to be involved, then it's in our interest. The idea of just defending our nation isn't even a concept anymore. It's like that's the bar that we need to set. It's more about defending our interest overseas. But our interests have been so widely defined. I mean, obviously, I can understand if a country, let's say China, invades Canada. I totally get the idea that, okay, this is technically in a foreign country, yet our interests are at stake there. I could understand a potential response to that. But when something's happening in Somalia or Yemen, I'm sorry, or even Afghanistan or Iraq, you can't convince me that that's an American interest, that that's really going to harm us in some way. And it ignores, and I realize how much conservatives ignore the death and destruction that happens in these different conflicts. We just ignore them. We act like we're all pro-life, but we act like the deaths of these non-Americans, they don't matter. Now, the truth is, I say conservatives because that's who I'm addressing, because that's the crisis readership. That's what I am. That's what I've always been. But like the liberals, of course, they're neocons as well. I mean, Hillary Clinton is another neocon's neocon. I mean, she is definitely, when Hillary Clinton was going to run in 2008 and McCain had it, I mean, the two of them, if they run against each other, they're mirror images of each other when it comes to foreign policy. They would be fighting to see how many wars they could start, who could start the most wars. So, but conservatives, we sit back in our comfortable homes here in America, and we don't recognize how terrible war is. And I've heard from, as I've become more opposed to foreign interventionalism of the United States, I've heard from a lot of military members who are on the same page because they've actually experienced it. They know what war's like. They know what these conflicts do. And so they've come to realize that you don't go to war unless it's absolutely necessary. You don't get involved in these conflicts. And so what we saw was, so for me, it was really in the 2010s that I really shifted to become definitively against American foreign policy, the neocon foreign policy, and really became explicitly anti-war. But the moment for most conservatives, I think, where they started to question American foreign policy, I mean, they would do it under a Democratic president, like they'd oppose things that Clinton or Bill Clinton or Barack Obama did just because he was a Democrat. But they were basically for, you'd still get Lindsey Graham supporting most of it. But the one thing that got, I think, a lot of conservatives to rethink it was Donald Trump. Donald Trump, when it comes to foreign policy, had varied instincts and terrible execution. I mean, that would be the oversight, the summation of his foreign policy while he was president. Great instincts, terrible execution. Because Trump questioned the neocon narrative. Trump would question why we need to be certain places. Why do we need to get involved? And that's great instincts. But then he ended up appointing a bunch of neocons in all the different positions. But at least it got conservatives, Republicans particularly, to say, you know, maybe these ideas, maybe getting involved overseas isn't that such a great idea after all. So I think Trump was really the catalyst that brought conservatives into the fold of saying, okay, let's question the neocon narrative. Whereas it was Ron Paul and libertarians, me and a number of other conservatives, I think it was Trump who really brought it over for most mainstream conservatives, so to speak, who aren't necessarily friendly to libertarian ideas. Now, what about just in Catholics? I mean, obviously, my audience here is mostly Catholics. What should our view be when it comes to this? And this is where I've really taken a big shift, where I really feel like conservative Catholics over the past few decades, during my lifetime, I'll just say that, have not been, what's the word I want to use? I want to say not following, but they've not been really in tune with Catholic teaching when it comes to war. And when it comes to military conflict, I really feel like Catholics have done a poor job of really embracing that. We embrace very well the teachings of the church on life, pro-life issues such as abortion, euthanasia. I think that's true. But when it comes to war, I really feel like we're lacking. We missed the boat. And I think, for example, so I'm going to pull up here on the screen for those who are watching, and I'll read it for those who aren't. This is from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, the recent one. And I know some people might have some issues with it, but this basically reflects the teaching that you'll find in older catechisms as well when it comes to just war. And this is from 2309, paragraph 2309. It says, the strict conditions for legitimate defense by military force requires rigorous consideration. That's the first thing. We can't just jump into military force so quickly. That's something I think we're just too quick to do. The gravity of such a decision makes it subject to rigorous conditions of moral legitimacy. And so the first thing it says, at one at the same time, it lists four different criteria, so to speak, for the use of military force. It's not saying military force is wrong. It's not saying it's inadmissible or it's automatically evil or anything like that. But it does say these four criteria really need to be addressed. And it says at one at the same time, meaning all four need to be true for a military force to be justified. The first is the damage inflicted by the aggressor on the nation or community of nations must be lasting, grave, and certain. In other words, what is it that the aggressor's doing? This is a judgment call. And this is one we have sacred boundaries we've created that whatever the boundary is now, if they want to change at all, there has to, we have to oppose that. But the fact is boundaries have changed for millennium and they're going to continue to change. And not every boundary change, even if somebody's an aggressor and doing it, requires us to be involved in it because, it might not be, it depends on how grave it is. Now, I do think in general, it's obviously wrong obviously the aggressor in that situation is breaking this. But we're talking about the response in America in this case. The second, that's probably the one that's the most fault that most military conflicts do meet. The second one is all other means of putting an end to it must have been shown to be impractical or ineffective. Now, this is one where I feel like the neocon knee-jerk reaction never considers this. They're like, oh, we're going to go. Their first step is wanting to use military force or at least threatening it. But I do understand that this is a subjective criteria. How do you know if it's been shown to be impractical and ineffective? But I do think often neocons are too quick to jump to, let's go ahead and use military force or at least threaten it. But I do think all other means of putting it into it, obviously diplomacy, negotiations. I mean, here's the thing. In the real world, if you have a country that, let's say it invades another country to change the border somewhat, you may have to, one of the means you could use to end this conflict could be to agree to new boundaries. Maybe not be exactly what the aggressor wants, but not exactly what the victim country wants either. That might be a way that you can put an end to the conflict that's practical. And it might not be ideal, but it might be better than other options. Okay, the third one is there must be serious prospects of success. This is where, for example, our involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan both failed this miserably. I mean, we just know this now in hindsight, but we should have known it then, particularly Afghanistan. Just there wasn't serious prospects of success of the mission that Bush and others had set, that is to say. If they had just gone after Osama bin Laden, that was the only objective they had, and Al-Qaeda, high-ranking people and cells and things like that, that probably would have had a serious prospect of success. But that's not what Bush did from the beginning. And by the way, if you want to understand that a little bit better, there's a book by Scott Horton called Fool's Errand. Fool's Errand by Scott Horton, that kind of details what Bush and the administration really was trying to do in Afghanistan. Okay, the fourth one is the use of arms must not produce evils and disorders graver than the evil to be eliminated. The power of modern means of destruction weighs very heavily in evaluating this condition. Here, in my mind, is the big one. This is by far the biggest criteria that I don't think, in my opinion, in my lifetime, no U.S. military intervention has met this criteria, because I don't think we understand the implications, the consequences of using modern means of destruction. This is something that dates back. This is not a Vatican II modernist Catholic idea. There are very good thinkers, theologians, bishops from before Vatican II that called into question the very idea of just war because of modern means of weaponry. And this is exactly what this fourth criteria is saying. The use of arms must not produce evils and disorders graver than the evil to be eliminated. If you nuke a city, how on earth can it be justified under this fourth criteria? It would have to be very extreme. And by the way, I do not believe the atomic bombs dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima at World War II were justified. But even aside from that, just theoretically, the evils and disorders it produces are so grave. And the modern means of destruction are very heavy. And so in my mind, in my lifetime, no U.S. military conflict has met these criteria, all four of them. All four have to be. I would say probably in my lifetime, the one that most people consider the most just, or at least closest to the most just, would be the invasion of Afghanistan. I have a podcast episode about this a while back where I talk about whether or not it's a just war, and I conclude it wasn't. And that's because the objective wasn't simply to capture or eliminate Osama bin Laden and the high-ranking officials of Al-Qaeda, the ones who actually did 9/11. Instead, it was nation building, overthrow the Taliban, overthrow, institute a whole new government in Afghanistan. And obviously it failed. So it didn't meet that third criteria of serious prospects for success. And the evils and disorders that it produced are far graver than anything that we tried to eliminate, because we didn't actually eliminate anything. And so I think this is something very important. I think, in fact, I just want to reiterate again that neocons in particular, and neocons left and right, like I said, Hillary Clinton, Mitt Romney, Lindsey Graham, whoever, we're talking about Barack Obama, Joe Biden. Joe Biden's a neocon when it comes to this stuff. We don't recognize and we don't appreciate the blowback. We don't appreciate the consequences, what actually happens when we involve the U.S. military in a conflict, because the truth is our involvement almost inevitably makes things worse. I would argue definitely we can see that in Afghanistan, and I think you could also argue for that in Iraq as well. I mean, you have a situation here in Afghanistan where you have thousands and thousands died, death and destruction, and nothing got better. And we just don't. And what it did do, though, one thing it did do is it lowers again the view of other countries of America. And I don't think America should live like, okay, let's care what Europe thinks, things like that. But at the same time, if it erodes trust in America, if it erodes the view of America, that's going to hurt us economically, as we are already seeing with a lot of trade partners starting to look elsewhere, to China, Russia, things like that. It's going to help. It's just going to hurt overall in a legitimate conflict that may come up in the future. Other countries aren't going to trust us because of these actions we've taken in the past. I think a case study, obviously, right now is the conflict in Ukraine. The neocons, of course, want to continue to up the pressure, the military involvement, the funding, the weapons, everything. And I think a lot of actually would like to get boots on the ground from America. And I suspect there actually are American boots on the ground in Ukraine. We just don't know about it. They're not advertising for it. But I think we ultimately, though, the neocons want to just keep on ratcheting up the pressure because we have to defeat Russia. But I think that's a perfect example where U.S. involvement over the decades have actually caused the problem in the first place because of, and I've talked about this on previous podcasts, because of our involvement in the coup of 2014, our involvement in expanding NATO all the way back to the 1990s, all these things we've done that have helped lead to a potential that we're going to need to use, or the neocons say we're going to need to use the U.S. military. And I just think as Catholics, we need to be very hesitant to use military power, to use America's military power in foreign nations. And also just to encourage military conflict through our funding and weapons that we sell and things like that to other countries or give away. I think we need to hesitate. I remember back at the Iraq War, both Iraq Wars, John Paul II, he opposed our involvement and he talked about peace. And I remember thinking time like, oh, you know, I was a big conservative Catholic at the time, neocon. And so I was very pro JP2. And I remember thinking like, you know, JP2's great and a lot of stuff, but he doesn't really understand this. He's got that European mindset or something. I tried to excuse it, but he was absolutely right. He nailed it. And I think Pope Francis today has been good on this issue. And everybody knows what I think about Pope Francis on a lot of issues. But like, for example, when he talks about the Russia-Ukraine conflict, I think he's very measured, and he talks about the overall how everybody has impacted, different countries have impacted what's happened. And I think that's a good thing. It's not a pro-Russia thing. It's just a matter of let's look at the reality. I think Pope Francis should be commended for that. And I think Catholics, though, we can never be comfortable with the idea of the U.S. military or funding going and helping to encourage more conflict in the world. We need to always be hesitant. I mean, after all, what was the wording that it used in the catechism? It said, military force requires rigorous consideration. The gravity of such a decision makes it subject to rigorous conditions of moral legitimacy. They used the word rigorous twice. And so that, in other words, if the media gins up a conflict that we have to do this, and that means that Catholics should say, hold on, I don't care how just it may sound, we need to step back. We need to be more measured. We need to think this out. Because we saw what happened. I mean, I've seen it so many times. I saw it in 1990 in the run-up to the Iraq War. I saw it after 9/11 in the run-up to the Afghanistan invasion. I saw it in 2003 and 2004 in the run-up to the Iraq War II. I saw for minor things like our Syria campaign, things like that, Somalia, Libya. And now we're seeing it with Ukraine. You get the media and in a mob mentality that they create a false sense of urgency. We must do these things. If we do not do these things, the worst thing in the world is going to happen. And I've now seen that happen so many times, and it's false every time. And so I'm not going to buy it anymore. As a Catholic, what we need to do is say, okay, let's step back and use our reason, apply rigorous conditions to whether or not military conflict we engage in or not. And so I want to make a clarification then. Am I anti-military? Do I think the military shouldn't exist? No, I don't. I think we need to have a strong military. I support a strong military. But a military is for defense of our country. It is for defense, is not for empire building. I know conservatives don't like when I use that language. A lot of them don't, because you know we're not an American empire. But I just think history will show that we were building an empire with all our interventionism, all our activities in foreign countries. I mean, what else is it when we're basically trying to defend a border on the other side of the world that we're so concerned about a border on the other side of the world? If that's not empire building, I don't know what is. But I think our military should be very strong as a defense. If anybody truly threatens us with invasion, bombing, whatever the case may be, or maybe attacks a country neighboring us, for example, then yes, I think we take that very seriously. And we could potentially have to respond with military force. Obviously, if somebody attacks us, like 9/11, we should use our military against them and against the attacker only, not. The problem is we threw everything but the kitchen sink in with our attack, like George W. Bush loved to do. But I will say, that being said about the need for a strong military, and I support that, I do also think, though, that we need to stop glorifying the military in our country. I think we've equated patriotism with promoting the military and being pro-military, their activities. And I think what that does is when we have the run-up to these conflicts, people are afraid to say anything against it because they're afraid that's going to be anti-military, which means it's anti-patriotic. You see the sports leagues do this all the time, that on any, like on 4th of July, they push out the military 100%. Why is the 4th of July a promotion, a glorification of the military? It should be a glorification of America and what makes America great. And that's not simply our military. Yes, our military has protected us from certain things. True. But it's not that that's what it's freedom and things like that that should be promoted. But you see, it's all about the military. And I think that that has a harmful psychological effect on people. And I think that that should be restrained. I think we should support our a strong defensive military. And that's it. I mean, you see sports leagues, this is a rant of mine, I know, but you see sports leagues where they'll talk about these people being, I've been at a baseball game before where they have their hometown, they have the hometown hero. They bring out somebody from the military, talk about how they're a hero. We all have to stand up and applaud them. And the one I went to this year, the guy had served like a couple years in the Coast Guard, like 3 years in the Coast Guard. That was it. I mean, that's it. How's that different from like a difficult job? I mean, I just don't get it. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to call him a hero for working for 3 years in the Coast Guard, then going off and doing something else. I mean, that doesn't make him heroic. There are military members who are true heroes, but, and there's a lot of heroes who aren't in the military as well. So I think we need to kind of tone that down a little bit. I mean, the fact of the matter is we talk about how our military is what makes us free. It's like their existence makes us free. And it's true. Their existence makes us free. If we did not have a military, a strong military, we very well could be in danger. I admit that, of certain internal forces and external forces at times. I don't think it's quite the threat that most people do, but I do think it is possible. But the truth is, it's not like the military has actually been used to defend our freedom in the past 50 years. That's something that is not true. It is true that the existence of the military defends our freedom, but the actual use of the military over the past 50 years has not defended our freedom. I'm sorry, but doing all the things our military has done in my lifetime has not defended our freedom in any way. If our military had not gotten involved in any of those activities, we'd be as free today as we were before it all started. So that, I think we need to have that distinction. So it's my belief that Catholics, really left or right, should be functionally anti-war in modern times today. We should be anti-war. We should be against war. Now, yes, in theory, I do agree that there is still the just war theory that is applicable, and there can be conflicts that the United States could get into that could involve the use of military force. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not going to use like a weasel word like Pope Francis does with the death penalty, saying it's inadmissible. I don't think it's inadmissible for the U.S. military forces to be used. However, functionally speaking, right now, I think we have to be anti-war. I think all Catholics should be. I am, and I'm proud to say I'm anti-war. I'm not going to hide from that. And I think all Catholics should have a similar viewpoint about war right now. Should be anti-use of the American military force as much as possible, unless we're actually under a direct threat from a foreign power. Okay, well, that's it for today. I predict this podcast will not do as well as my podcasts do. I find that people don't really like to think about this too much. I'm glad that the anti-war sentiment is growing among conservatives, but I think a lot of conservatives still are not willing to stand up to the neocon narrative, but hopefully I'll be wrong. But I appreciate those who did listen in, watch in on this, and hopefully gave you some food for thought, and hopefully it will make you more willing to be publicly anti-war as a Catholic, and understand that it really is a Catholic position to be functionally anti-war in modern times. Okay, well, that's it for now. Until next time, everybody, God love you.